All right, so we continue with IFRIC update, please.
All right. Thank you. So agenda papers 12A and 12B summarize the interpretation committee's March and January meetings. I will first talk about agenda paper 12B, which talks about the committee's January meeting. The committee finalized one agenda decision on how an entity accounts for a transaction in which it contributes property, plant, and equipment to a newly formed associate in exchange for shares in that associate. This was a practical application question we were made aware of, and the committee responded quickly to resolve the matter. I will now move on to agenda paper 12A, which summarizes the committee's March meeting. The committee discussed 10 matters. It published final agenda decisions on 4 of these matters, providing explanatory information, and published tentative agenda decisions on another 3 matters. So again, I'll first just talk about the final agenda decision. Now, these start on page 4 of agenda paper 12A. The first one relates to IFRS 9 and deals with the consequential amendment that IFRS 9 made to paragraph 82A of IAS 1. While the committee concluded on the requirements in paragraph 82A of IAS 1, it did not consider any other presentation requirements in IAS 1 or broader matters related to the presentation of interest in the Statement of Comprehensive Income. Some respondents to the tentative agenda decision suggested that the board consider, as part of a research project, the presentation of interest by financial institutions in profit or loss. The other 3 agenda decisions relate to the recognition of revenue in real estate contracts. These were also practical application questions we were made aware of, and the committee responded quickly to resolve them. Now, as part of the discussion on finalizing these agenda decisions, the committee discussed its approach in responding to questions submitted to it. This is covered in more detail in agenda paper 12C of this meeting, so I will not say anything more about those agenda decisions at this moment. Now, in addition to finalizing the 4 agenda decisions, the committee also published 3 tentative agenda decisions. These start on page 3 of the IFRIC update. The first 2 agenda decisions relate to particular types of financial instruments. On the basis of responses to outreach that were performed on these requests, the committee observed that the financial instruments that were described in the request were not common. The committee did not obtain evidence that the matter had widespread effect and consequently tentatively decided not to add them to their agenda. Now, the third tentative agenda decision relates to whether an entity can include particular short-term loans as components of cash and cash equivalents in a statement of cash flows. The tentative agenda decision explained how an entity would apply the relevant requirement in IAS 7 in that context. The committee also discussed 3 other matters, which start on page 2 of the IFRIC update. The committee continued its discussion on clarifying the meaning of unavoidable cost in the definition of an onerous contract in IAS 37. It will continue its discussion on this matter at its meeting in June. It also discussed 1 request relating to the recognition of deferred tax when a transaction results in the recognition of an asset and a liability. The committee will research developing an interpretation aimed at addressing the question. Lastly, the committee discussed the question on how an entity accounts for payments relating to uncertain tax positions when the payments are for taxes other than income taxes. The committee will update its analysis of this question to reflect any effect of the new conceptual framework at its upcoming May meeting. I will stop here and ask if you have any questions on the matters included in the January and March IFRIC updates before we move on to agenda paper 12C.
No comments? No.
Okay, great. I will move on then and just quickly mention 12C. And what 12C does is really just take a section of one of the papers that was discussed by the Interpretations Committee and really lift that extract to just, I suppose, relay back to you. We felt this was an important part of the committee's discussions. It really was the committee discussing in some detail, I suppose, in the committee's now focus, I suppose, in being responsive, both in being responsive from a timeliness perspective, but also importantly being responsive by trying to provide as much support as possible to stakeholders, even when it decides not to add something to its agenda. Then naturally the question that arose in the context particularly of the IFRS 15 questions was, what does that mean and how far do we think the committee should go in being responsive? And in essence, I think the committee had, by the way, a very good and thorough discussion of this at its meeting. The outcome was the committee largely agreed with what you read in this paper as the sort of staff analysis of the approach. What was highlighted by respondents, what we discussed, which of course is that in providing what is very much helpful explanatory information and agenda decisions, there also are risks, of course, in a sense, in terms of how far do we go in providing that explanatory information. And the paper sort of in paragraph 12 set out some of those risks that were highlighted in comment letters that came back to the committee. And I think the discussion at the committee then said clearly there are some risks in terms of how much information we provide, which really means that each question that the committee considers needs careful consideration. In a sense, we think that in most agenda decisions that include explanatory information, we think that the committee is going to be responsive by pointing to the applicable requirements, providing some extra context, potentially explaining what was the board's objective, what's the underlying principle behind those requirements, and even potentially in some cases going as far as maybe spelling out how would entities walk through the requirements. So what are the kind of questions an entity might ask itself in working out this answer? And I think that in agenda paper 12A, by the way, in the March update, on page 9, I think there's quite a good example of that. If you're interested, it's the revenue recognition agenda decision that talks about identifying performance obligations. And you'll see that in the bottom half of page 9, it's really where we kind of set that out in the sense where the committee has kind of highlighted the relevant requirements, walked through how would an entity actually walk through those requirements and what are the kinds of questions it might ask itself in terms of identifying whether there's one or more performance obligations. But in that instance, the committee didn't provide a conclusion and answer to that question. It just said, here's the types of questions you might want to ask yourself when you are answering that question as the entity with this revenue contract. And saying this, so we think that's more the norm in a sense, and it's why in what is in paragraph 13 of this paper, we say we think the committee generally doesn't provide answers to what are very highly specific fact patterns. And saying that, we think there are times when it might need to go a bit further, but only when having looked at it, you know, the committee really thinks it needs to. I think under that objective or principle of trying to work out what do we think would be beneficial to stakeholders in terms of them obtaining a common understanding of the requirements. And in the context, of course, the March meeting and the revenue questions, that was viewed as being helpful in the context of deciding whether to recognise revenue over time or at a point in time. And just in highlighting one final piece, I'll just say I think the committee really focused on what was said, by the way, in this paper and thinking about its response to these questions in March. So, for example, there's two aspects I'll highlight in a sense where the committee, in a sense, might have said could have gone further, but didn't. It just stopped a bit before in terms of where they thought was the right place to be and providing information that would help stakeholders get to a common understanding. One is, in the context of that page 9, reference at identifying performance obligations, and the committee did not provide a conclusion on that, just set out how to think about it. The second is in discussing the particular fact pattern around what was Agenda Paper 2C, one of the questions about whether you recognise revenue over time or at a point in time. I think, importantly, as part of the committee's discussion, it just enhanced the fact pattern in one of the questions to ensure that in the fact pattern there was a particular sort of judgmental assumption that was built into the fact pattern, in the sense that meant then the committee could reach a conclusion based on that fact pattern, but it hadn't sort of gone beyond what would be considered appropriate, I suppose, in the agenda decision. So with that in mind, I don't know if in reading this paper and anything I've said, there's any particular questions that board member had.
Amaro.
Thanks, Ness. It's not a question, it's a comment, actually. Is to thank you for bringing this paper to us. I think this is very helpful to understand the approach that the Interpretation Committee is trying to develop in helping jurisdictions. I really agree with what is in here, and particularly being quite involved with the tensions around application of IFRS 15 in some jurisdictions in Latin America. I think the way the agenda decision is beefed up in the summary is truly helpful. And so I really congratulate, and I thanks for the paper, and I think we should pursue similar approach in the future.
Kuslaza.
Yeah, thank you also for bringing the paper, and I think those agenda decisions are really proving useful, and so it is very important to me that they keep a strong standing, and that you can continue helping the effort to reach those and make those, so that the committee is very helpful. The point, it's just a point of attention that I would like to note, that because I am, you know, we hear stakeholders eventually discussing, and words like what you have in paragraph 9 when you refer to what the board had in mind. I think your sentence very clearly showed that this is illustrated either in the objective or the principle, so it's really something that exists in writing. And I think it's very important to ensure that it is the case, so that, you know, there is no unwelcome criticism of agenda decisions.
Mary?
Exactly. So only to respond that, I think what you're picking up, Francois, and when we do that, is what we're saying is if we can link words that are written down that explain the board, the underlying principle or explain the objective, that's what we're doing in agenda decisions. We're lifting words that are already, you know, there as sort of in the basis for conclusions or elsewhere. We're not sort of making it up in sense.
Mary?
Risk of statement of the obvious, but I just want to say, as somebody who attended all of the Interpretation Committee meetings of the revenue issues in particular, I thought it was good that the staff asked the committee to stop and think about the level of detail they went into and whether or not they answered the specific fact pattern in each of these cases, considering the information we had about diversity in practice, and also thinking carefully about the timing vis-a-vis the mandatory effective date of the standard. So as somebody who is watching almost from a process, as much from a process as from a content perspective, I think it was all done very carefully, considered, thinking about the costs and benefits of things. And congratulate the staff for having set it out in a way that was done. But I'm very comfortable as a board member that all the tensions were considered. Not everybody's going to like the outcome, but it wasn't. We didn't think of that.
Doc?
Yes, just a question. I think this is really helpful, no doubt. But can I ask a question? So what is the difference between this kind of documents and the example in the IFRS 15? Because there are lots of examples in the IFRS 15, and which is not, in a sense, authoritative. And this is not authoritative. So then, how would it be reflected to Green Book? All the text will be written in the Green Book? And how can I, future constituents can refer to this example, and can they treat it as if it were included in the examples of IFRS 15? So that is the question.
Yes, it's got the same level of authority and a sort
same
of
level of authority. Sense.
Both are non-authoritative, but both come out of the building. So I think that, if I could put it that way. In terms of accessibility, though, that's, I think, a really important point.
Yeah.
And so I think two things that we're trying to do to help with that. I think one is that the agenda decisions are going to be in the Green Book.
Yes. They are. Yes.
And also on the new website, we've set it up so that if you go to IFRS 15, for example, all of the materials that exist on IFRS 15 are available there in one place, including all of these agenda decisions. So it's now much easier than it used to be in the past to find this.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
However,
we need to advertise it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, I like it. However, one concern is there is a big difference in the due process. So in the case of example, which is included in the IFRS 15, it is balloted. And then all the board member read, depends on the board member, but read carefully. and if something is wrong, it is checked. But, agenda decision, it was discussed well in the IFRIC meeting, and some board members attended. I trust it. However, to me, I haven't read it until I got this paper last week. So therefore, in terms of due process, it is quite different. So how can you say it's the same level of authoritative documents?
That's just a matter of fact, I think, the authority point. But on the due process point, yeah. I think the really important thing that we are making sure we did, and when I chaired the last meeting, I was super, super careful on this front because of all of the discussion on this. The first decision the committee has to make is there actually enough in the standard for me to reach this tentative agenda decision? So the first very formal step we have to go through with the committee is to say, do you agree that this can be done in the form of an agenda decision, or do we actually need to do standard setting? And that's the first very formal, very careful step. So if it's going beyond what's in the requirements, it would need to go to standard setting, which then has the full due process of standard setting. But even if it's an agenda decision, it does go out for comment. It goes out for 60 days of public comment. Mm-hmm. And I think one interesting thing, and even the committee members themselves have commented on this at the last meeting, since we've changed the website, so if you go on the new website, things open for comment come up on the front page, you can now see that all of these tentative agenda decisions are out for comment, which used to be not very visible before.
Okay.
As a result of that, I think, in conjunction probably with the style of agenda decisions that we're doing, which are more concrete, we're getting many more comment letters than we did in the past. So the due process handbook says that's what we have to do for agenda decisions, so we're completely compliant with that due process. But I think that the thing to really take note of as well is we're getting much more focus, much more input on the due process exposure periods on these tentative agenda decisions. We're getting a lot of input on them now.
Okay, thank you.
No further comments. This brings us to the conclusion of our vote. Thank you very much.